WEEI's afternoon program. Andy Hart here alongside Nick Fitzy-Stevens, who's filling in for Christian Arcand. That was Joe Mazzulla talking about the surprising loss the Celtics had earlier this week in Indiana. Came back from a large deficit, took it to overtime, and then were not able to finish the comeback earlier, I think, in the season than many thought. Maybe they were going to lose a game. But before we get into the Celtics, who return to the court tonight, we need to touch on real quick. The Patriots injury report is out.
It's out.
It is out. And the most important name on there is Drake May, quarterback, concussion, questionable. So he is one of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I believe 9 players that are all listed as questionable.
Oh, so we're down from, we started at 16, then we went to 15, and we're down to 9.
Nine players,
Mrs.
Alex Austin, ankle. Okay. Kyle Duggar, ankle. Christian Ellis, who's been playing a little bit at linebacker, abdomen. Michael Jordan, not that one, guard, ankle. Fitzy and Mike Giardi's favorite player, Vadarian Lowe, ankle and shoulder, your left tackle potentially of the present. And if Jerod Mayo has a say, maybe the future, he's questionable. Fitzy, well, how do you say your guy's name, Roy?
Jacqueline Roy.
Not Jacqueline?
I think it's Jacqueline.
Jacqueline Roy.
Jacqueline.
Has a neck issue. He is questionable, and Sione Takitaki knee is questionable. But officially speaking, as of Friday, Drake May is questionable with a concussion. I'll be honest with you, Fitzy, I probably should know this. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means he's out of the protocol and now it's up to them. I don't know if that means it's questionable whether he'll pass the protocol today or tomorrow. I'm not technically, and we should effort to get this. I think we'll probably get some clarification by somebody like Mike Reese or others as they tweet out analysis of this injury report in the coming minutes and hours. But Drake May, officially questionable. I hope he plays on Sunday.
I bet you we will not know. And even if the Patriots feel confident or comfortable in getting the clearance that they're looking for, if they're so optimistic or hopeful that he will start Sunday in Tennessee in front of so many thousands of Patriots fans in Nash Vegas, Nissan Stadium, I bet they're going to play. Unlike when we were going through the plan versus the competition, we all knew that that was kind of a charade. But this, I think they're going to play close to the vest. They will not come out and announce who the starter is. I bet it'll go right up till Sunday. I'm guessing about a 9 a.m. rap sheeter on Sunday that he does right on, like, NFL. Your old pal, crap sheet. Yeah.
Not Schefter? Will it be a 9 and then a 9:01 or a 9:01:13?
As first reported by?
Yeah.
Or we'll HT? See. Or does, we'll Field Yates, does Field Yates get it?
I don't think so. I don't think Field Yates gets it. I think this is either
This is kind of a fun game, Andy. We could play, you know, you sort of, you play reporter roulette, if you will. Like, which guy gets to break the news that Drake May is starting? I'm my money's on Rap Sheet.
Okay. I'll take Schefter. What are we betting? Six pack?
Yeah. Let's go six pack. Let's go.
And are we going down to the second via Twitter stamping or whatever they call it?
Firsties. Stamping? Yep. Firsties.
Okay. All right.
Six pack against it. Got it.
Okay, I like it. Firsties, we have to look at the firsties loss of the season for your Boston Celtics. And now they have this weird little scheduling thing that bothers me more than anyone else, but they play Charlotte twice in Charlotte over this weekend.
Those are always weird. They did. I remember that a couple years ago, they played the Magic twice in a row. They did that also with the Heat. And
I think this one actually has a home-and-home version to it. So they play two in Charlotte now, and then late in the year they play two in Boston against Charlotte. But anyway, Charlotte, not a good basketball team. Celtics, very good basketball team. But in second place, something I'm not sure anyone thought we would say about the Boston Celtics at any point this season. And I liked the effort for the comeback the other night, which actually had to tear me away from my Hernandez documentary, because when they were getting blown out, I was like, well, this one's over. I'm going to go watch Hernandez. And then got some updates on my phone. I was like, oh, I guess I got to go back and watch the Celtics. They might go to overtime. And they did. They couldn't pull it out. My guy, Jaylen Brown, had a horrific night behind the arc. One of
he 11. Was. Can I?
Hey, easy, can, easy.
No, I understand
you
that
will put
man.
Put some
is,
respect on that man's
he
name.
He is an
he's
Eastern
MVP
Conference Finals and
finals.
NBA Finals MVP. But if you know he's got a,
I'll hit
if
you.
He's if he's cold, right? If he's ice cold. I mean, he was how cold? Ice cold the other night. He didn't have it at all. Talk about having a case of the yips. Why did he get the final shot?
I don't know. That's a good question. You should ask Joe Mazzulla.
Shouldn't that have been Derek White?
It probably should have been anyone but him.
Tatum was bricklaying in overtime as well, so it should have been.
Yeah,
or how
Tatum
about
Pritch?
How about your boy Pritch?
Pritch wasn't great the other night.
Pritch better have my money.
Yeah, I don't. They didn't shoot well from three, and that's why they lost. That's just the reality of this team. They're sort of simple to analyze. Generally, when they shoot well from three, they blow people out. When they don't shoot well from three, they have a chance to lose. Do they have a chance to lose tonight? Do you have any concerns about Jason Tatum's shooting woes maybe coming back? We had put that to bed. Got rid of the hitch. It looks better. Okay, he's got no shooting. Now you got Jaylen Brown, who didn't have a good shooting night. More likely, Celtics are in a dogfight tonight, or Celtics are up 18 by the second quarter?
The latter.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I think they're mad that they're doubly mad, actually. One, that they put themselves in that position by being a little asleep at the wheel against a team that was highly motivated, considering the way that they played them last year and, of course, how the conference finals went. So they're mad at themselves for putting themselves behind. I think the lead ballooned up to 24 at one point for the Pacers. And then two, you'll compound that frustration or that anger with the fact that they came all the way back, played so incredibly well over the final 5 minutes, tied it up, and then only went to overtime and went ice cold all over again, launching deep bunnies for no reason. They didn't play complimentary basketball in overtime at all. I was so fired up to watch that as well. And that's got to be like, you got to be kidding me. We came all the way back. Like, what if you're down 28-3, you come all the way back, only to then lose in the final play of regulation, you know what I mean? Or like in overtime.
Kind of
like, it would.
That would change the hell of a story.
Yeah, sure. Like this wasn't great. No.
No, it wasn't. And I don't expect them to shoot as poorly from three as they did, at least multiples. I mean, and that's where you got into problems that I thought Tatum even shot poorly. Now, he got hot a little bit there at the end of regulation to sway the numbers. But his consistency is something that I've harped on for years. I would like to see him. I think that's the one area of his game. Mm-hmm. I know he's talked about MVP and wanting to win an MVP and be the face of basketball and those things. If he wants to take his game to the next level, become more consistent, because he has a weird way, and in some ways it makes his success all that much more remarkable, because he can go like 0-for-7 in the first quarter, and you're like, oh no, he's having a bad night. And then by the time you read the final box score, he finished with 34 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists, and you're like, well, that's a really good game, but I watched the first quarter, and he kind of stunk in the first quarter. If he could ever take that inconsistency out of his game and sort of level the so those 37 points are essentially, well, he scored 9 in the first and he scored 9 in the second and then he scored 10 in the third and then 9 in the, and he got to 36. That's the one thing I think that could help this basketball team, is him being a little bit more consistent. But yeah, I think there's a chance that the Bobcats are the get right, like that this is a team, because I do believe that this Celtics team, I don't really buy as much into the Olympic motivations. I think they are inherently motivated by goatness, by proving just how good they are, by winning another title, by
make some history,
hierarchy, by maybe chasing wins records and things of that nature, and being in those types of conversations. And if you want to do that, you're going to lose games. We all knew they weren't going 82-0, except Wiggy. Wiggy thought they were going 82-0.
I was told it was on the table. Even Colin Cowherd tweeted.
Well, it was on the table. It is no longer on the 81-1.
81-1 can be done.
41-0 at home, still on the table. They have not lost at home. But I also think Indiana's a team that you swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. But you did, but you didn't.
You didn't really have Halliburton.
And you barely beat them. Like, it was a dogfight to sweep them. You needed that crazy three in the corner from Jaylen Brown.
How about the crazy three in the corner from Derek White in game four to tie it up?
There was a lot that went into that series. And I think that's a team, historically, over the last few years, has given the Celtics problems. So I'm not really alarmed by that. But we had a texter yesterday, and I never got a chance to read it, that was like, guaranteed they split in Charlotte. They don't win both games. They're going to lose.
That would be pathetic.
That's not great.
No.
And that is not what I'm looking for if I'm Joe Mazzulla and the leadership of this team, whether it's Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, the whole core. If you are going to be special and want to be special, want to be treated special, and I keep making the comparisons, the early 07 Patriots, they started to make it clear they were trying to do special things. And remember, ESPN was like adding a tab to the ticker. It was like NFL. Patriots, and they got like their own updates. If you want to be in that world where halfway through the season the ticker on ESPN and TNT is telling everybody, here's the NBA scores and here's what the Celtics have been doing this week, because the Celtics are the most important story in all of basketball, you want to get in that world? Well, guess what? A, you win tonight, and you sure as heck don't split a trip to Charlotte back-to-back games. You have to take care of business in those games because there are going to be a couple one-offs along the way where a hot team like Indiana or, you know, Cleveland or whoever, you know, takes you out. So I think they will respond. I think they will live up to their resume and their hype and their ability tonight. And I think the number's like 10.5. I would feel quite comfortable laying the 10.5.
So would I. And I would look for a big bounce back night for Jaylen Brown as well, because I think his game has evolved to such a degree that if he has a bad night like that, of course he's going to be motivated to come back out. Not that he needs to prove anything to his teammates, to his coach, to his fans, to the rest of the NBA, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big night tonight because he knows what he left on the table. I mean, when you open overtime, when you fight all the way back and your team kind of carries you on an off night, and then you open overtime by missing, like, front rimming two free throws?
Not great, Bob.
No, not great, Bob.
Yeah, no, both of them. Tatum missed a free throw, too. They kind of kicked that game away at the free throw line.
They should. Believe it or not, they actually kicked away a game where they were down 24.
Correct. And then the final image of Jaylen Brown taking that shot.
Air ball.
I don't know if I've ever looked
that
bad.
Siakam just drained a 32-footer.
Yep. That was ugly. So yeah. It won't be ugly tonight. Celtics, Charlotte, in Charlotte. First of back-to-back meetings with the Bobcats. Celtics get off their little losing schneid here. See if they can avoid the losing streak. I feel comfortable they will. The Bruins, on the other hand, avoiding losing streaks and breaking losing streaks, I don't feel so comfortable. They are bottoming out early in the season, and that is a problem for the team. It's a problem for their hopes in terms of the postseason and the standings, and it's a problem for Jim Montgomery. And if you go over to WEEI.com, there is a column by Scott McLaughlin detailing the fact that Jim Montgomery may have thrown a Hail Mary, but unlike Jaden Daniels, it was not complete. It was kind of ugly. And now where do we go from here? Scott McLaughlin, WEEI.com, will join us in studio right after the Stizzard of Oz takes you through what's trending now. That was Mike Milbury with the Greg Hill Show this morning, talking about Bruins head coach Jim Montgomery and his hot seat status. According to our own Rich Keefe, he is very much on the hot seat. I think he double-hotted it. And speaking of double-hot, we've got Scott McLaughlin joining us now here on the WEEI afternoon program, hot off that column that I was reading. Scott, you said Jim Montgomery threw a Hail Mary, and it didn't exactly work like it did for Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. So I guess we have to just start. How much longer do you think Jim Montgomery will be the coach of the Bruins?
It honestly feels like it's like game to game at this point. This is the situation that Don Sweeney has set up, where you didn't sign him to an extension before the season. You know, said preseason, hey, we've talked to him about an extension. Okay, that's not actually getting it done. Now you go into the season with him not being signed beyond this year, and you get off to a bad start. And like in any sport, and especially in the NHL, in that situation where you have a lame duck coach and a team not playing up to its capabilities, or at least what you think its capabilities are, the questions begin about, is there going to be a change? And it's, we've heard it locally. National guys like Darren Dreger have said, you know, management and ownership are having tough conversations. Like, that situation invites this when you don't start well. We have not heard from Don Sweeney since the season started, so there's been no public vote of confidence. I don't have any sources telling me like this is happening, you know, this weekend or whatever, but let's just look at it. Like, you have the Flyers again on Saturday. It seems as of now that, you know, Montgomery's still the coach for that game. That's a team that just shut them out on Tuesday. The Flyers have, prior to that game, were giving up the most goals in the NHL. So say things go poorly against Saturday. All right, where do you stand now? Like, questions certainly aren't going to stop. An okay Seattle team comes into the Garden on Sunday. It feels like, you know, a bad weekend. You have to do something. And if you're the general manager, there's basically two things. One is a trade. Trade away a core player, shake things up that way, and get guys' attention.
That feels early.
And the other is fire the coach. Like, those, you know, throughout history, those are the two options that GMs have in this situation.
I'm kind of with Milbury, though. I mean, Jim Montgomery didn't go out there and give up six goals on the first 16 shots out of the first, 22 shots he faced? You know, and Swayman, we were, you know, Andy and I are mostly football guys, but I think even at some point on the Six Rings pod, we were sort of comparing the Swayman thing to how a lot of times in holdouts in the NFL, like, oh, here comes an injury, or, you know, they're not in football shape by the time they get out there. It feels like he's in an extended preseason right now, and he's certainly playing that way. It hasn't looked himself, hasn't had a signature game just yet. I don't think it's a bad investment. But to blame the coach, this feels like scapegoat city. To just go from greatest regular season in NHL history to 18 months later, like, this guy's no good, they've tuned him out, and the players aren't playing for him anymore, I don't buy it.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they've necessarily tuned him out in the sense that, like, I don't think they're ignoring what the points he's trying to coach. It seems like for whatever reason, like, they just can't do it. It's like everyone knows how they want to play, and they're not playing that way. They want to play fast, north-south, forecheck, physical, get to the front of the net. They're not playing fast. They're not forechecking because they're not getting there on time. They're not getting to the front of the net. They are, I think, 30th in the NHL in high danger chances. Like, they're not generating good chances. So, you know, it's like Montgomery can tell them what to do, but it's clearly, and I think guys want to play that way. Like, you talk to them in the locker room and, you know, that they're not giving off a vibe of, like, panicking. Like, it's like they know what they need to do, but for whatever reason, game after game, they cannot do it. And now this week, it has clearly gotten worse. Like, getting shut out by the Flyers and then losing 8-2 to Carolina, those are, like, straight up, those aren't just, like, losses in tough games. Those are, like, straight up embarrassing performances.
As an old school hockey guy, I know a famous player once said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. This team doesn't get any shots. Forget about goals. They don't get any shots.
Yeah.
Why are they not getting shots? Like, what's the problem there in terms of not being able to, like, create offensive opportunities? Is it just what you're saying, that they aren't fast enough? Because that's the other question when you were answering that, kind of tying that in. Is it that they want to be fast and aren't playing fast, or are they not fast enough? Are they a slow team?
Yeah, 15 shots on net is pathetic.
Yeah, and that, Andy, that's kind of like the $64,000 question here is, you know, like, Mike Milbury brought this up during his appearance on the Greg Hill Show, too. It's like, are they actually just a slow team, yeah, or are they out of shape and playing slow, or like, what's going wrong there? And both are fair, because Cam Neely said after last season, we need to get faster. And then they didn't really make moves that made them faster. Like, the guys they brought in, I think, are better skaters than people are giving them credit for. Like, even Nikita Zadorov, like, I hear people saying, like, oh, he's just, like, a big lug. Like, Nikita Zadorov is actually a pretty good skater for a guy his size, for a defenseman. You know, Max Jones is a good skater. He keeps taking penalties, so, like, he's not staying in the lineup. Like, Mark Kastelic on the fourth line is a good skater, and you've seen that. He's been one of the few guys who has actually lived up to expectations. Or in his case, exceeded them a lot. But yeah, as a team, there's no question they are playing slow. They are losing a lot of foot races. As I said, they're not arriving on time in the forecheck. So even if you want to go in there and hit a guy, if he's already moved the puck by the time you get there, then it doesn't matter what you want to do. Like, you're either taking a penalty or you're turning back up ice and playing defense now. So something is just so off, because they have so many guys who are just dramatically underperforming, where it's like, even if maybe they missed on the offseason in the sense that the moves they made weren't going to put them over the top to be a Stanley Cup team, this roster is still plenty good enough to be a playoff team. It is not lose 5 out of 6 bad. It is not lose 8-2 to Carolina bad.
Right.
Like, So like, there's a clear disconnect and just disjointedness in this team, where people have made the observation that, like, it looks like they haven't played together before, and that is how it looks. Like, the chemistry's not there, the way they want to play isn't there, and that's where you look at Montgomery, and it's like, well, is that a coaching thing, or is something going on with the players where, I don't know, they weren't ready to go this season, or they're not ready to go now? Like, why does it look as bad as it does?
Scott McLaughlin from the Skate Pod and WEI.com joining us here on the WEI Afternoons in studio. How long do you think then, Scott, could ownership, do you think, like, Neely and Milbury would let this, if they think, like, okay, That's clearly what Milbury said this morning on the Greg Hill show. So if they believe this is a players related issue and they don't want to take it out on Monty yet, how much more slack could you see them cutting him? Like quarter of the season, all-star break, four games? Or is it just could it be game to game? Like if they lose 4-0 tomorrow and they're just absolutely non-competitive once again, could we see something by the week?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, it snowballs enough where you have to do something. And whether you think it's Montgomery's fault or not, and I certainly don't put this all on him at all, at some point you have to do something. And like I said, the two options are change the coach or change the roster in a meaningful way, not like send down, you know, fringe forward X and call someone up or sign Tyler Johnson, which is still something I think they should do. He's a veteran who's still around skating with them at practice that they haven't signed for some reason. But like something bigger than that, that gets guys' attention, because it feels like they need like a true wake up call to kind of get everyone's attention and get them focused, sparked, whatever. And Montgomery's tried probably just about everything he can think of, whether it's changing the lines, yelling at them in practice, which he did on Wednesday, yelling at Marchand on the bench. Like, he's trying stuff and none of it is clicking. So at some point, if you're the general manager, you need to act. And I would say sooner rather than later. Like, I don't know if you wait till Thanksgiving or Christmas. Matt Porter had something in the Boston Globe today about teams that are out of the playoffs on November. People always talk about Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Teams that are out of the playoff picture on November 1st, over, I forget how many years he went back, but it was like 27% made the playoffs.
Ouch,
like,
babe.
You're already playing catch-up. You're out of the playoffs right now. So, you know, I know, like, standings-wise, it's like, everyone's kind of jumbled together. But you fall behind further, it is hard to make up ground in the NHL. It's a three-point system. Every overtime loss, you get a point. Teams that get off to hot starts, by and large, stay there and are hard to catch.
So Rich Keefe's report on the Midday Show was that, barring a turnaround or something of that phrase, what's a turnaround? Like, is it, do they just need one win right now, and is that the first step? Do they need to get back in the playoff picture? Do you have an idea what would be perceived as, quote-unquote, righting the ship at this point?
I think it needs to be 4, 5, 6 good games in a row. So like 2 weeks of good, solid play. Mm-hmm. And there might be losses in there, but they have to be losses where you played well. And this team has not been able to string together games. Like, they went out to Colorado, had a good win, beat an Avalanche team that was reeling a little bit. They were off to a slow start of their own, but nonetheless, everyone knows that's a good team. That was a nice win. Then they lost the next three, including getting shut out by a Nashville team that had not won to that point, and getting blown off the ice by Dallas at home. Mm-hmm. Then they bounce back. They beat Toronto in overtime, right? Like, pretty good win. Even though we all like to mock Toronto, that's a pretty good team. All right, there's something to build off. You get the emotional high of Marchand scoring in overtime. You respond this week with the losses to Philly and Carolina. Like, one game is definitely not enough. They've shown they can win one game every week and a half. Like, it needs to be 2 weeks straight of good play, 4, 5, 6 games.
So your goaltender on the season, Jeremy Swayman, signed in the offseason for 8 years, $66 million. Played in 8 games. He's 3-4-1. Not great. The 3.6 goals against average is stupefying. I mean, I didn't expect that we were going to see Patrick Waugh, you know, 2.0 this season or for the next half decade or more. But he's like skating him. Now, of course, a lot of this also can go back to defense. I understand it's not always just a goaltender's fault. But he's not himself yet by any stretch. Could there be too much pressure on him now?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he likes pressure. Like, I think he's the kind of guy who thrives under that. But no question, he hasn't been good enough. I don't think he's been the number one reason they've lost any of these games. I don't even think he's given up really that many truly soft goals.
Okay.
But he's not in the NHL, it's not good enough to just make the saves you're supposed to make. That makes you a below-average goalie in the NHL. You need to take goals off the board, especially if you are going to be paid like one of the very best goalies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You need to bail your team out when they need bailing out. And that is what Swayman has not done yet this season. He has not bailed them out. He has not, you know, made the just taken a goal off the board at a moment in the game where they just need him to be there. If you look at, like, goals saved above expected, which just tells you, okay, here's what would be expected to for you to give up based on number of shots you face, quality, all that. 58 goalies in the NHL have played at least three games so far. He is 44th in goals saved above expected. Like, not good enough. Past seasons, he's been consistently top 10, top 5. So, yeah, like, he definitely has a lot of work to do. He looks like a goalie who missed all of training camp in the preseason, and I know he worked out over at BU. Great place. As I sit here, my BU shirt getting ready to head over there tonight. But like that's not an NHL preseason. So yeah, it looks like he's still ramping up, and unfortunately the Bruins have needed to lean on him and needed him to steal some games, and he has not been able to.
So I know I haven't been in this full-time radio show thing long, but I do know that one of the classic questions you have to ask a caller when they say, I want to fire the coach or manager is, well, who are you going to replace him with? So let's play radio. Let's just say Jim Montgomery loses his job.
Oh.
Who are some of the candidates to replace him as the Bruins coach?
Well, they have two guys on staff that they interviewed last time this job was open when they fired Bruce Cassidy, and that's Joe Sacco, who has been around a long time on Montgomery's staff and Cassidy's staff before that, and Jay Leach, who was formerly Providence Bruins head coach. They liked him. He left to become assistant coach in Seattle with the Kraken, and now he's back as an assistant coach here this year. So you start there. Those are very obvious in-house choices. You know, even if you just give them the interim label, plug them right in. You know, outside of that, I don't know if they would want to expand to like a wider search in season. That's obviously tough. There's not a lot of coaches hanging around right
Bill
now.
Bill Belichick's available.
True, yeah.
That would be absolutely perfect. You know, let's add something else to his daily docket as well.
I mean, good coach can coach, right? Didn't he say a good coach is a good coach? That's how he sold Matt Patricia to us. He's a good coach, right?
Sure,
coach
he'll be the Matt Patricia of the Boston Bruins as well.
Bill's busy. He's on a beach somewhere.
He's showing off with his girlfriend right now. Meanwhile,
each
Linda Holiday
is worse than the
what last. An amazing week of costumes. Anyway, see, this is already more pleasant than talking about the lowly star for the Bruins. So they have two guys, Leach and Sacco.
And Joe Sacco.
Are they hardos? Are they like hardo coaches? Because that's the theory we've been kind of bandying about, the Parcells to Carroll to Belichick, the pendulum swings in different directions. Mm-hmm. Is one guy too nice? Do you make up for it? Are either of those two guys hardos?
Yeah, and it's not a young team, right? By any stretch.
They definitely got younger. They're like the sixth youngest team in the NHL
really?
This season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, hey, maybe that's part of the problem. Like in past seasons, mm-hmm. they've had a lot of veteran leaders around.
Right.
And this season it's Marchand, then your alternate captains in Pastrnak and McAvoy. And I think there's only two other guys who are 30, maybe. I think it's Charlie Coyle and Hampus Lindholm. Like
Elias,
isn't
he 30?
I think he's turning 30. He's like right around there.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, like it's there. So there's not that, you know, group of like 8 to 10 guys who have been around the league for 10 years. Like there has been in past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
As far as whether they're hardos, I don't know if I'd describe them that way. Joe Sacco did kind of have that reputation. His only other NHL head coaching gig, which was in Colorado, like 12, 13 mm-hmm. years ago. And that didn't really work. That was a young team that had kind of like just drafted Landeskog and some other key guys for their rebuild. And he didn't really mesh with them, and it didn't last long. It wasn't very successful. But from people I've heard from, like he's changed a lot over the years and kind of learned better how to deal with young players. So I don't know if that means he's softened up, or could he still turn on, you know, that hard switch if he needed to, if that was what the Bruins were looking for. It's been so long since he's done it as a head coach that, you know, it would be interesting to see what his style would be.
All right, Scott, before we let you go, just put some odds on it. Let's just say 10 days from now, Jim Montgomery will or will not be the Bruins head coach.
I'm going to... So I don't know what the odds would be, but like I would, if I could get decent odds on it, I unfortunately would probably bet no, because I don't know that this team can just turn it around that quickly. Like that their problems just seem so deep right now. Like they're playing objectively bad hockey, and that is tough to turn around in just one game or one weekend. And again, because he's not signed after the season, like Montgomery is the easy fall guy, and it's the easy change for Sweeney to make to try to spark this team.
Yeah, I on the way out, I know we're up against it, but I just want to ask, why do you think that the guy takes him to the greatest record of all time? They make it back to the postseason last year. By and large, seems like he's their guy, and yet he doesn't get the deal before the season starts. What is it that you think of, just real quick, what is it about him that maybe that they made them say, okay, prove it again?
I think that they're not totally sold on the playoff performances. Obviously, okay. The greatest regular season team ever falls in the first round to Florida. And then last year, they almost blow a 3-1 lead again in the first round. They survived Toronto in overtime in Game 7. And then you take Florida to 6, but some of those games weren't very competitive. Some of them looked a lot like how this season has looked, where they really struggled to generate shots. They'd go entire periods with 2 or 3 shots on goal. And so I think they probably aren't entirely sold that Montgomery can get them to play a way that wins in the playoffs would be my guess if I had to.
He's Scott McLaughlin, WEEI.com, the Skate Podcast, and I think unofficially becoming the WEEI Afternoon Show Bruins Insider when he makes his little visits to the studio and lets us know how hot the seat is for Jim Montgomery. We'll see if the Jim Montgomery-led Bruins can turn it around. We're going to switch gears here. We're going to have a little fun. We just touched on it. I think we're going to get into Bill Belichick's social media presence over the course of Halloween, which, as everyone knows, got more and more cringe-inducing by the post. Scott, thanks for stopping by, and
thanks
we will
me.
Be right back after this. That noise is appropriate. That was obviously Bill Belichick upon joining Instagram in his season away from the NFL, but certainly not away from the spotlight. This is the WEEI Afternoon Program. Andy Hart here alongside Nick Fitzy-Stevens, who's filling in for Christian Arcand as he gets away for the weekend to a nice wedding. And maybe he'll run into Bill Belichick, because I think Christian might be down the Cape somewhere or in one of the islands. I forget where he said it was, but it's local. And Bill Belichick, so if you thought that was cringeworthy, which it was, and if you thought, I don't know, his Halloween costume where he dressed up like Ryan Clark was cringeworthy.
Oh, my. Hey, by the way, how'd you feel about the whole Ryan Clark, Bill Belichick costume routine?
It made me uncomfortable, but not in the way that I think some people did.
Right.
The fact that the face didn't move and it looked like an elderly woman bothered me, because that was
That's the thing. Like, first of all, I just think, you know, going in, no one's ever going to go in blackface again. I think in any sort of thing that is completely wrong. Let's just go ahead and just get the obvious out of the way. But
sure.
it needs to be said and stated.
Second day in a row. You liberals, Arcand, yep. Fitzy.
Hey, Nick Fitzy Arcand here. I don't like it. I don't know about you guys. 617-779.
But, yeah, like, I just thought that was a weird choice. You can go as Bill Belichick without looking like a giant vat of buttercream frosting dropped from the ceiling, landed on your face, and hardened.
It was very,
like,
very
terrifying strange. Looking. I'm sure if my children tuned in, they would have been like, oh, God, what is that?
Oh, if you just took that character and that look and put it with some eerie music and in a closet and the person opens the door in their kitchen, you would freak out. It might as well be Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or anybody else.
Or something on some strange-ass Disney ride or something like that.
Absolutely. Just, no, that's terrifying.
Or a prank video, like where people do fake farts on a park in the on a bench in the park. Like, it just didn't look right.
So speaking of pranks... Yeah, that's creepy, too. That makes me a little uncomfortable. And if that music played, that would be great music to play while Ryan Clark's Bill Belichick character just walked down the hallway towards you and scared the hell out of you. But Speaking of pranks, I thought I was being pranked when I saw yesterday, because I thought it reached a new level, the picture of Bill Belichick dressed up as a, like, Gorton's fisherman. And
trust the Gorton's fisherman. Now I'm hungry for fish sticks. Thanks, Andy.
Oh, I like fish sticks.
Fish sticks, highly underrated. Sandwiches. Freezer foods, real quick.
Yeah.
Fish sticks, because you eat them again when your kids are young.
Yes.
And we always have them around. They're phenomenal.
Ew.
Yes, they are.
What?
You get a little tub of tartar sauce.
No, time out. Stiz was just in the kitchen making himself a late lunch, early dinner. It was lettuce from 3 weeks ago out of a bag with some taco meat that I would not feed to my dog.
Wait, and he's ate the taco meat yesterday, too. So this is
now
day old?
That's leftover taco meat?
No, I think it's leftover taco.
Yeah, it's leftover from last night. I think it looks really good. See, it's on my the Twitch, Andy.
Yeah, I see it.
Your tacos. You think that looks good?
Is this not a taco salad?
It is
taco meat on top of a salad.
Okay, it's taco meat. That's meat salad.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a real salad. Taco salad.
There's no tortilla
some
strips.
Chips
there's no
or something.
Yeah, is there any guacamole? Andy, yeah, like tortilla strips, maybe a little cheese.
A little. Yeah, you can't just throw meat on top of lettuce and get a taco salad.
I totally had that.
Okay, can we all agree Ryan Clark's costume was the Stiz taco salad of costumes?
Yes. But even worse than that was Bill Belichick, Gorton's fisherman, reeling in his girlfriend, the mermaid. And what was the exact tagline? I believe it was my
catch of the year.
Catch yet or something.
Yeah.
Fitzy, so you are...
Sweet tuna.
Nope, we're not doing that. You are the biggest homer I know. You are all in Patriots and Bill We Trust and Tom I This, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Please... You can't tell me this doesn't make you uncomfortable. And I'm not even getting into the young girlfriend thing. Leave that. Push that to the side. This could be Linda Holiday.
She won the week.
Tremendous. The Kill Bill. Absolutely. And even better that she addressed it on and was like, oh, get over it, people. We're just having a little fun here kind of thing.
It's a good zing.
Bill is awkward as F on social media. And I don't know if he...
Hey, everyone.
Goes along, if he's got a gun to his head or withholding of whatever she could withhold from him to make him do things.
Somebody has gotten in his ear, Andy, and told him if you sort of mock who you were lightly and gently using some of the tenets of Belichickian behavior from decades past, but do it in a youthful, self-aware manner, that it's going to make you more approachable and it's going to make it easier to engage with younger players at whatever that next job is. He's getting this information from somewhere. It can't just be her.
I don't
love it. Can't just be her. And by the way, the true winner of the entire week was Ryan Fitzpatrick. When he did you see?
Yeah. Yeah, we did that yesterday. We read that yesterday.
That might be.
Although most of you people don't believe, they went after him. They attacked him.
Are you serious?
Right to make comments like that.
If people can't appreciate Ryan Fitzpatrick's, that's in the running for tweet of the year.
It absolutely is. And if there was the opposite, if there was the hasty pudding worst whatever thing by whatever Harvard does, this post yesterday of him reeling in his girlfriend
just
beyond, it also makes me
kiss
creepier. I said forget the part about the young girlfriend. It also, like, what you do behind closed doors, but now, like, I'm watching you reel her in on the beach.
Yeah, so she was in
and she looks hot, if we're going to be honest.
She's a very attractive young lady, but she's in like that little tight Belichick short shorts New York Giants outfit last weekend.
Yeah.
And now she's...
Which was terrible. Terrible costume. No one thought Bill Belichick when they saw that. They said, like, here's a hot chick dressed up as...
A Giants
fan. Giants cheerleader, Giants fan.
Yeah,
I don't know.
She likes Daniel Jones. Well, weird. But, like, okay. But this whole thing, like, look, I got her, everyone. Like, she takes 3 hours to get in the ice-cold waters so Belichick can get, like, a lol and a couple of likes on social media.
Yeah. It's
sorry. Like,
this shows how much pull she has. This is 100% her idea.
You sure?
1,000%.
Oh yeah.
Percent.
No, I'm with Stiz. She's like, this will be funny, Bill.
Yes.
He's like, okay.
Yeah.
Wait,
he
but
absolutely
Fitzy, you said,
does not want
to
do this.
But do I
you
get?
Said
do I get to do blank
advice?
Later?
Sure.
Yes. That's what that is.
Okay. Okay.
What's
we
that?
Don't need to go down too far. But you just said you think he's getting advice that this
she
is
may be
actually
part.
Tactical.
I think she's part of it. I think she is definitely.
She's his PR advisor.
No, she's funneling him
Stacey?
Some youthful advice.
She has his ear, 100%,
and
that's
more.
Not his ear.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Both no, I just
potty
hashtag
potty
taco salad.
But this makes me and people think I'm a Belichick hater. I'm not a Belichick hater. I actually think he's such an impressive, accomplished coach, and things that he did over the years were magnificent. I'm actually feeling like he's kind of I don't know, undercutting his own legend or aura or I don't know. I don't. It feels like
I think he's over. Personally, I think it's overexposure. Like he didn't
feels
just
like a gimmick change in wrestling.
He
like,
didn't pick it, a
and it's
single,
not working.
Right. Okay. So he went babyface. He has he reverse healed. He went babyface. I got you, but
love it.
I just think it's overexposure to the point where it's like, oh, did he say that on Coach inside the NFL
well, that's
on
a separate
social
issue.
Media?
Yes. I kind of wish he just went away for the year, quietly went away for the year.
I just wish he picked one spot. Like, if he just did McAfee or the Manning cast, went on there, roasted the NFL, killed the Jets, occasionally had something to say about the Patriots, XYZ, that would be enough. But the fact that it's, like, across 17 different products at this point, and he's living this awkward life out loud, like, good for him. Good for Coach. Landing an attractive young lady, living his best life. This is the way he wants to do things, okay? Personally, the idea of being in a romance with somebody that's young enough to be like your great-granddaughter freaks me out.
Yeah, but I actually think in this case, that's the least of the issues. Bringing it public in
it
such
is.
A cringe-inducing photo, the whole thing. Hated it, but whatever. Who are we to judge? Who are we to pick on Bill Belichick? We don't have the right, most people would tell us. And they might be right. He's living his life. He can do what he wants. He's an adult. She's an adult. I mean, plenty of people. I would say social media has exploded in all forms, thanks in large part to people willingly or unwillingly embarrassing themselves and us getting to look at it and comment on it and laugh at it and repost it and do all these things. So he's just kind of doing business is being done, to steal his own catchphrase, right? That's what 2024 is. So Bill's living it up. I don't know if it's good or bad or help his coaching career. It is one more hour to go here on the WEEI Afternoon Show. He is Nick Fitzy Stevens. He's got the big hair, the big opinions, and he's got a lot of thoughts on Drake May.